Several bills on for public hearing and possible work session today, and we will just take them in order. Council, we will open a hearing on Senate Bill 267. Council.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 267 amends ORS 51.025 to require counties and cities to obtain approval from the Supreme Court before justice courts or municipal courts can become courts of record. It also requires counties and cities to petition the Supreme Court before courts of record can cease operations. It provides that justice and municipal courts that are operating as courts of record as of January 1st of 2008 shall cease to do so by July 1st of that year unless the county or city files a petition with the Supreme Court by March 1st of 2008. And then the Supreme Court enters an order approving the operation of the courts by June 30th, 2008.
Thank you. Kingsley Click from the Judicial Department. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Kingsley Click, State Court Administrator with the Judicial Department. Actually, Council has summed up the whole content of the bill. Just for a little bit more background, in 1999, Representative Prozanski, now Senator Prozanski, introduced a bill to address allowing municipal courts and justice courts to become courts of records under certain circumstances. And what we didn't really realize at the time was we didn't put into place a process for the Supreme Court or Court of Appeals to know when that had occurred. And so now when they get those types of appeals, they have to do a lot of checking to ensure whether it is properly a court of record. And so we wanted to set up just a simplified process where they send in a petition and then it will become part of the overall record. And when appeals are received in the appellate courts, they will know they have proper jurisdiction. Or if they're in the circuit court, they will know they have proper jurisdiction.
Are there questions from the committee? Senator Prozanski.
Yeah. Kingsley, thank you. I guess the only thing in hearing the reading of the bill, it sounds like that the Supreme Court would actually have the ability to deny a municipal court or a justice court from becoming a court of record. That's, I guess I need to get clarification if that's the intent.
Chair Burdick, Senator Prozanski. It is in the sense of setting up a petition for authorization. I don't have a reason why the court would not authorize it. It was trying to set it into an existing process. But you're correct in reading that you could say that the Supreme Court could deny it. I don't know for what reason they would.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Prozanski.
I don't feel comfortable with what I just what I've heard. I guess because that really takes away potentially local control of those courts and those jurisdictions to decide if they want to make their court a court of record. I clearly understand the problem here, and I think an easier way to fix it would be if they do determine or decide to become a court of record, that they would have a duty to inform the appellate courts, the judicial branch, that they have entered into as a court of record, as compared to having something that has to be submitted to the court, and then the Supreme Court would have the ability to deny that. I don't understand the reason. My understanding, I think we only have maybe two, maybe three courts of records that are now at the municipal court level. I think Lake Oswego, I believe, took advantage of that, and I believe there's another one in the upper Willamette Valley. So I don't know how many others have actually entertained it. I know one of the courts that I serve as a prosecutor, that they are looking at that. They have looked at it, and they are hoping to maybe get the city council to go ahead and make that investment in the near future. And so my concern at this point, if you have some of these courts that have or cities that have been planning on doing it, now they have to wait until they get some type of approval, and I'm not sure what the rationale for the approval as compared to the notice that the court is now shifted from a non-court of record to a court of record.
Chair Verde, Senator Prozanski. Part of it is because the notice could be a letter, it could be anything, and that doesn't really provide a mechanism for capturing the action. And so we would like it to be a motion that comes to the court so it's entered and becomes part of the official documents. The other reason is that there are other requirements. While the ordinance, it requires that they pass the ordinance, which provides what I would call the documentation that then could come up to the court with petition, but they also require that the Justice of the Peace Municipal Judge be a member of the Oregon State Bar, which that could change, and that also they have the court reporter or the recording device in place to make the record. So there are some other conditions that they meet in order to become the court of record. So we were trying to find a streamlined way that was more than a letter that fit within the mechanism. And usually on the monthly meetings of the Supreme Court in their open meeting, they take motions for people to become pro tems, motions for, you know, changes to the rules, and we thought that could be added as motion, you know, petition for court of record. So they're not that they would sit there for a long period of time. Usually things that come in for that docket are handled in 2 weeks to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. I have Jim Nass, our appellate staff counsel, who is one of the ones who raised the issue. And we're being, you're correct, we don't have a lot of courts in that situation now, but we're trying to be proactive because even now with the few, there's this need, everybody's calling around, how do I know, do I have to go down there, do I have to get a copy of the ordinance, how do I know I can properly accept jurisdiction? So it is a more formal issue, the proper jurisdiction for the appeal, than just the authority of the local municipality or county to decide what it wants to do. We're trying to take care of the jurisdictional piece of can the Court of Appeals accept this appeal, or is it, does it have to be in the circuit court? Can the circuit court accept it, or is it supposed to be going to the Court of Appeals? And that's the reason for a little more of a formal mechanism.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Isn't it, I mean, there could be some type of other process, such as a declaration, which would be able to be received by the court and have the requirements that it establishes through that declaration that it's taken the steps that are currently required for them to become a court of record. My concern also is there's nothing in here that if the Supreme Court, for whatever reason, chose not to allow that court to become a court of record, what is their redress? It's basically, if they say no, there's no appeal, maybe a motion to reconsider, but I think that we're really undercutting what we were attempting to do in 99, and that was to allow those cities who wanted to make that investment. And Madam Chair, just I don't want to belabor the point, but there's a lot of cost that goes into these courts when they have to go through these process, and basically you have an individual who gets found guilty by either by the court being the trier of fact, or it's a jury trial. And upon that guilty finding, that individual, since it's not a court of record, has the automatic right to take it to a court of record, which is, in this case, a circuit court. And so basically the city is potentially is putting on the case twice, and that individual, the defendant, gets two bites at the apple, as some people would say, because you win the one in municipal court, then you have to take it up in, let's say, in my county to Lane County Circuit Court, and you have to basically try the case again, and it's just like the first one never occurred.
Let me ask you a question here, Senator Prozanski, and it's good that we have the expert on this subject right here at the dais. When you initially did your bill, what kind of, I assume it set out criteria that the court would have to meet, the criteria that Kingsley was talking about,
right.
You know, you have to have a record and all that. But it didn't have any kind of approval process. In other words, once they met this criteria, these criteria, then they were automatically a court of record?
That's correct. The difference, I think, that is the philosophy. I know that in the state court system, there's always been, an ongoing position that they would prefer all of the courts to be within a state system. But that really kind of runs afoul to the local rule, local control, home rule, as to allowing for these junior courts, either at the county level or at the municipal level. In putting together the bill that passed in 1999, we worked hand-in-hand with the Judicial Department to try to address those concerns that they had and make certain that, you know, it would, in fact, pass the muster of being a court of record. And so I would say that we have met that burden. I understand and the complexity of the issue that once you have more of these courts coming forward without the knowledge that the that it's now a court of record, that they're not sure should they accept the appeal or not. I think there's ways to address that without taking away the authority from the local jurisdictions to decide for themselves whether or not they want to have a court of record or not.
And my concern after listening to this is that this bill would seem to go beyond addressing the problem you identified, which is that the appellate courts not knowing whether they were getting an appeal from a court of record. So would it be maybe what would be a good thing to consider is to work with Senator Przanski to develop a pure notice requirement for the courts to send to the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals, something that will go on the record so they won't have to go through this process of inquiry. And then we can save the discussion of the quality control and those issues that are raised in this bill for discussion another day. Is that sound acceptable?
Chair Burdick, Senator Przanski, yes, I can have Jim Nass, our appellate legal counsel, work with me with Senator Przanski to identify an existing process that would give notice to the litigants in the courts and not create
acceptable?
The concern.
That's wonderful.
Perfect.
Yeah, I'd love to make sure it works for everybody, and I agree. It should be imperative that if the city or the county decides to make a court of record, I think they have a duty to make sure the Judicial Department knows that they've taken those steps so everything can be processed and we know what type of court it actually is and where the appeal would go if there's going to be one.
And as we go down the road and we get more of them, then maybe we'll find other issues that need to be addressed, but we can certainly agree on this one. Are there other questions from the committee? We will close the hearing on this bill, and we will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 268. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Madam Chair, Senate Bill 268 concerns the workers' compensation statute. It provides that a court does not have jurisdiction to review an order of the Workers' Compensation Board if the party seeking review fails to serve all adverse parties within the time limit for filing the petition. The bill also clarifies that the board has jurisdiction to enter a settlement order even if a petition for judicial review is pending before the Court of Appeals. It allows the Court of Appeals to dismiss the petition if the parties settle the case and it's approved by the board.
Okay, Ms. Click.
State Court Administrator, I'm asking Jim Nass, our appellate legal counsel, to join me at the table. He worked with the Court of Appeals in preparing these issues, so I would prefer he explain them.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, as counsel mentioned,
would you please identify yourself?
I'm sorry. My name is Jim Nass. I serve as legal counsel for the Court of Appeals. The two primary purposes of the bill are, as counsel has stated, the first one, I have to fall on my sword a little bit because the mistake was made a number of years back when the Judicial Department offered legislation to make clear that of all the requirements set forth in the statute for filing, some were jurisdictional and some were not. The two that historically have been considered jurisdictional are timely filing and timely service on the adverse party. Even more years prior to that, we had sought legislation relative to appeals from courts of law to make that clear, and we were running into some of the same problem with workers' compensation cases, so we thought it would be a good idea to import what is now ORS 19270 sub 4 relative to courts of law to workers' compensation. And I drafted some legislation that would do that. The way I drafted it, with one big block of text. Legislative Council properly tried to make it more readable by breaking it into two subsections. Regrettably, what I didn't notice at that time was that the effect of breaking it into two subsections was to make timely filing jurisdictional, but not timely service. And the court so held in a case in 2005, Liberty Northwest Insurance Corporation versus Spivey. And so the primary purpose of this bill is to fix that mistake and to make clear that timely service of a petition for judicial review on adverse parties is a jurisdictional necessity. The other primary thing that the bill does is many workers' compensation cases settle while they're at the court. The board is required by law to approve any such settlement. The Workers' Compensation Board takes the view that it does not have jurisdiction while a case is pending on review to act on that settlement. So what we have to do when parties come to us and say, we've settled this case, we have to dismiss the judicial review, remand it to the board. Hopefully the board approves it, but the party seeking review takes the risk that if the board should fail to approve the settlement, they have neither a settlement nor a judicial review. We have the authority, I think, to reinstate, but no one has really ever tested that. So what we think is a better model is the same model that we use for appeals in courts of law. And there is a statute that says if parties settle a case while a case is pending pending before our court, is that the trial court retains jurisdiction to enter whatever orders or judgments are necessary to implement the settlement. Similarly, this bill would confer jurisdiction on the Workers' Compensation Board to enter an order approving or taking whatever action it wanted to regarding the disputed claim settlement. If the result of that disputed claim settlement was that all issues were resolved, we would then dismiss the case. On the other hand, if the disputed claim settlement only resolved some issues, then the case would go forward on those issues not settled. And then lastly, should the board fail to approve it, then the case would simply go forward on all of the issues. And those are the two primary purposes of this bill.
Are there questions from the committee? Thank you. This looks like a pretty straightforward measure, committee, so I think I'm just going to close the public hearing on 268 and open a work session on Senate Bill 268. Senator Walker.
Well, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 268 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 268 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Walker, would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Thank you.
I love workers' comp.
The committee is in your debt, and I had considered that when I asked you to do it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 269. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 269 amends several statutes that require parties to use statutory forms in certain marriage dissolution actions and child custody and spousal and familial abuse cases. It requires that the state court administrator create forms and brochures that comply with the statute and repeals the provisions of the statute that set out what the forms are. It also makes some changes to the Marriage Dissolution statute. It states that a person seeking dissolution of a marriage must serve a petition and a summons on the spouse, and the spouse must file a written answer within 30 days. It allows a court to find the spouse in default and enter a judgment for summary dissolution and award costs if the spouse fails to answer the petition.
Ms. Click, you're on again.
For the record, Kingsley Click, State Court Administrator, and with me is Felissa Seidlick, our family law staff counsel, who has worked with the bill and with the work groups behind the bill in the family law area. It is, as counsel stated, it's actually somewhat of an amicus effort for legislative counsel who is on a mission to take out statutory forms where appropriate. And in this particular area, we have a very dynamic forms work group, and our forms are on the web, and we work with Legal Aid and other entities in this area to provide forms that people can understand, that cover the court's needs, that can also be part of our web-based outreach. And so this is our bill to remove the specific statutory forms in furtherance of that effort in the family law area. Melissa, do you have any?
No, unless there are questions.
Okay. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you. This looks also very straightforward. So I'm going to take a big flyer here and close the hearing on Senate Bill 269 and open a work session on Senate Bill 269. Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 269 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 269 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Cruz, would you like to have this be your maiden voyage on judiciary?
Yeah, I would. This looks like a good government bill to me.
Yep, I thought you'd appreciate that. Okay, now we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 270. Counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 270 allows an operator of an assistive communication device for a juror with a disability to be present during jury deliberations, so long as the person who is operating the device does not participate in the deliberations except to facilitate communication between the jurors. The bill also deletes a provision requiring the parties in a lawsuit to stipulate to the participation of the assistant and prepare jury instructions, and instead it requires the court to instruct the jury on the presence of the person assisting the jury, the juror with a disability. This bill would take effect immediately upon passage.
Okay, Ms. Click.
For the record, Kingsley Click, State Court Administrator. It is as counsel described. It's a recommendation out of our joint bar Oregon Judicial Department Task Force on Access to State Courts for Persons with Disabilities that was published in July of 2006. And it conforms basically our state law in that area with our ADA, the federal ADA requirements.
Okay. Are there questions from the committee?
Question.
Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kingsley, can you go over what counsel was talking about where the parties would have to be signing some type of documentation? I want to get clarity as to, for the record, exactly what they're signing in the sense of what are they approving for this person to be able to serve on the jury with the knowledge that there's going to be someone else in the room that's assisting them, or what?
Chair Burdick, Senator Brzezinski, I thought it was taking out the requirement.
Okay, I just missed her.
And making it pro.
Yeah, I was going to say there'd be some issues there. That was the other way.
Okay, appreciate
further.
That. Any other questions from the committee? This looks like a very nice bill, so I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 270 and open a work session on Senate Bill 270. Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 270 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate for the due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 270 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Brzezinski, would you like to carry this?
It'd be my pleasure.
you're in. Okay, now we will move into a public hearing on Senate Bill 271. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 271 concerns the waiver or deferral of filing fees and court costs and transcripts on appeal. It repeals the current statute that governs those provisions and essentially puts in a new one in its place. So Senate Bill 271 would permit a judge in a civil action to waive or defer fees for a party if the judge determines that the party is unable to pay. It also allows the presiding judge to delegate this authority to a court administrator so long as the party is able to appeal the administrator's decision. It permits the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to create standards and practices for the waiver or deferral of fees or costs. It also creates a monetary obligation and lets a court enter a judgment against the party who had the fees waived for the deferred costs and, or fees, but allows that person to petition the court for relief from that judgment. In a case in which a losing party would be liable to the person whose fees were waived for costs and disbursements, it requires the losing party to pay the state or the county back the amount of fees that were deferred. It also makes confidential all information that was collected by the state when the party applied for a waiver or deferral of fees.
Ms. Click. Thank you, Council.
For the record, Kingsley Click, State Court Administrator. And I'm going to also invite up here Karen Hightower, who's Deputy Legal Counsel for us, Jim Murchison and Jim Nath. They're here to join. They're members of a work group that took the directive from former Chief Justice Carson to form a task force in this area to come up with consistent standards for the courts to apply in the fee and waiver filing fees. Originally, we thought this would be an in-house work product because statutes now provide under ORS 21605.5 the authority of the Chief Justice to provide standards in this area. But as a work group got more into the issues and working with the courts and with legal aid and other entities that often represent low-income persons needing access to the courts, it became more obvious that there need to be a combination of both an in-house effort and standards and some actual changes to the statutes to ensure consistent procedures around the state. So we have provided, as Council went over, some specific section by section. A number of the things are existing law, but because of the rewrite, it all becomes bolded print, and we've tried to distinguish that. There was a section 4 in Senate Bill 271, which had more specificity on exactly what happened at the time of filing and created extra steps for trial courts to hold papers. And the comments back from the trial courts is until we have a more automated system, this would create a hardship for them to try and institute this. So we've taken out Section 4, requested some amendments be drafted in that area. And with taking that out, we think the gist of the bill preserves the ability to standardize and streamline the fee waiver processes statewide. I believe has the support of legal aid and other groups. And I really brought the folks from the work group here to get into any specific areas of interest or answer questions.
Let me ask you just a technical question. You said that the first couple pages are existing law, but they're in bold print.
Oh.
Why was that?
Madam Chair, I misspoke if I said all the bold print is not. It was a rewrite of several sections, and we tried in our testimony to say what is existing law and what is new parts. For example,
okay. So
the authority to defer or waive by a court is already existing law, but it's now coupled with a delegation that is new law.
Okay.
And I can walk through some of those sections.
Okay. I just misunderstood your initial comment. Thank you. Do any of your panelists want to give any remarks before we go into questions?
Karen Hightower. We're available for questions. We can describe any area that you have questions about.
Okay. Let's see. Did you go into your amendment that you had proposed?
You'll see on your, for your record, Karen Hightower, Deputy Legal Counsel, you'll see on Attachment 1A and Attachment 1B amendments to Senate Bill 271. They look bigger than they are. The amendments do two things. They remove Section 4, and in order to remove Section 4, it's a little bit bigger job because we had some sections that said except as otherwise provided in Section 4, so that ended up eliminating some other sections from the bill. So with the elimination of Section 4, it'll be a much smaller bill. And we have one technical amendment that we needed to do when we removed Section 4 for the FED filing fee language. When we had it saying except as otherwise provided in Section 4, we were doing something different with filing. But since we're not going to do that, what we're doing with the FED filing fee language is making it the same as all other circuit court filing fee language, so it's just a little bit different than we had originally. And then the second major thing we're doing is doing a technical fix to Section 5. And the reason is because of the definition of obligor in Section 1 of the definition section. It's a very narrow definition, which makes sense in the context of the bill, in that an obligor is somebody in which we've deferred fees, and then we've said now you have some time to pay these fees, but you're a judgment debtor and you will be paying these fees. But the definition of obligor does not include someone in which we have waived fees, because of course the fees have been waived, so they will not be a judgment debtor. So the use of the word obligor in Section 5 is a little too narrow. So we're trying to use a word that includes somebody in which has had fees waived. And so that's why we're suggesting the word obligor be removed and we say applicant instead. Or if legislative counsel has another word that works better, that works with. We're trying to say the person for whom we've waived the fees.
Any questions from the committee on the bill or the draft amendments that we have in front of us? Okay. No questions. We will wait on this, and so you can refine your amendments, and then we'll take it up at a later time. So we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 271. And I want to remind committee members about our meeting on Friday with the Supreme Court, our lunch meeting, and the Court of Appeals and the Tax Court. And we look forward to seeing you all over there. We will be meeting jointly with the House Judiciary Committee over there.
Madam Chair, I will be in Reedsport with the Senate Education Committee Friday.
Oh, well, not if somebody breaks your kneecap first, Senator Cruz.
Well, that's what I'm afraid will happen if I don't show up there.
Yeah, so. these decisions. Okay, is there any other business from the committee? Thank you. We are adjourned.